How do you feel about how TF2 has differed from its original design philosophy?
I don't really know. I think TF2 is better today than it was when we first shipped it. I guess that's the closest I can say about how I feel about it. I'm not sure if the question is trying to ask me if do I think it has a different philosophy today than when it shipped, and I'd say absolutely. I think design is the result of a set of goals you have and a set of constraints you're under, and the goals we have today are different than the ones we had when we first shipped. I don't think we'd be the first to say that. Hopefully TF is different today than it was when it shipped, because otherwise we'd be failing at trying to meet those changed goals. Overall, all those of us on TF are constantly trying to make TF into something we think is better. So hopefully after doing that for 3 years or so, it is better today than when we first shipped.
What do you think was the most successful addition, or the, least successful addition to TF?
I think the best package we ever shipped as a whole, as an entire thing, was the Spy Sniper update, in terms of how the impact and the just the design and implementation of that on all aspects of that, from the way it was delivered to the community on the webpage. That was, I think, the first time TF's, playing TF outside the game, like the act of being in the forums and reading the web pages reached the point where it was a game in itself that was exciting and fun to play, with the whole spy, the sniper, the fake,
the
leak, and the spy fading in over time behind the sniper and the communities, the fact that it was fulfilling a community desire to some extent from previous updates where the people kept conspiracy theorying about whether it was the spy update in disguise and all this. So I think the package, everything from the game and outside the game together as a whole in Spy Sniper, was the best we've done.
Right.
I think the items we shipped and the changes and additions to the game were also great. I think the Huntsman's one of the most, certainly one of my personal favorite weapons we've shipped. It's not more powerful, it's absolutely worse than the sniper rifle, but it's just more fun to use.
Right. Also, hats, of course, was the little extra thing right there in the Spy Sniper update.
We'd shipped hats before them.
Right,
before
well, that
too,
was...
But,
yeah, but that was kind of when it started really
picking
up steam.
Yeah. I guess the other thing, I felt like the Spy's items were really good. I felt like the two different cloak watches created some significantly different spy play styles, right? Like if you a spy using cloak and dagger, or a spy using the dead ringer, just plays probably more differently than the base spy than if you swap weapons out in any of the classes we'd shipped prior to that. I think we created some really interesting, and that's sort of the spy in general in a lot of ways, is like he's changes to him, as opposed to something like the heavy, where your tuning knobs on the heavy are often much more about damage done and damage received, and that narrow focus makes it harder to create interesting things for him. The spy is just full of interesting options. It's hard to add something to him that doesn't make him play in a really different way. It's easy to create items for him. He has so many mechanics in the cloak and disguise and all that sort of stuff that it's a fertile ground.
Some of the newer polycount stuff definitely changed up his play style big time.
Yeah, I think that's... I think if you pick all the classes and look at all the weapons and you say, what's the dynamic range on this class? What's the variance of, that you can create through just equipping different items? I think the Spy is absolutely the widest. He's got really wide variety of play styles, from losing disguise completely to being able to stand in one place invisible forever, and all sorts of neat stuff there.
So who ends up designing and approving the new weapon stats?
You know, you can't really point to any design decision at Valve and say who made that one. It's such a collaborative process that we all, you know, the entire TF team is involved in it. You know, for a specific decision like that, I don't know who first proposed it. I don't know who implemented drove the playtesting of it and what tunings were made in it before we shipped it. It's just a collaborative thing. So I guess the short answer to that is, yeah, all of us do. Everyone on TF is involved in the designing. And at any point, there's someone who sort of is responsible for the shipping of something. So someone would have owned that weapon, or a weapon, I should say, in terms of making sure it was getting the testing it needed and that the feedback for it was being gathered and that the conversations that needed to happen around what changes need to be made to it were going on. But that person doesn't, you know, get to... It's not about having a final say or anything. That's just... It's more like facilitating a meeting. That's sort of all that is.
So where do you get the majority of the feedback?
I don't know. I mean, we get lots of email, we read lots of forums, and we play a lot of the game ourselves, and we watch a lot of replays and stuff, before replays, watch, stream games. And I mean, I think when you, the responsibility for someone who has a product that, like TF, is to try and find all the places that your customers are talking about your game and all the places where they're experiencing and creating things around it, and try and, you want to take on all that and try and find common threads amongst it. I don't think it's, we certainly don't sit down and try and make a decision about which one of these groups we should listen to more, I guess, than others. I think you need to be aware of the biases involved in various forums, right? Like, there are interesting trade-offs to be made when you read forums that are dedicated to TF versus gaming forums that happen to be talking about TF. You know, you'll get different data from both of those, and the responsibility of the game developers is to make sure you're reading both of those and reconciling them and being aware of the sort of mental framework that each of those groups is operating in. Neither of them are necessarily more valuable than the other, but you need to be aware of their frameworks, I guess.
Right. Do you feel that any certain forums, such as your own Steam forums, or maybe, say, Facepunch, has influenced Team Fortress one way or the other, or is it just...
I mean, we read them, so they've influenced TF. I mean, it's as simple as that. The only way a group wouldn't influence TF, really, is if we didn't know they existed. You know, anyone who sits down to do some work in a given day and thinks about what they should do is going to be thinking about the feedback they've seen from customers. And I don't mean necessary feedback that was sent to us. I mean just whatever they've read. I mean, often the most valuable feedback is watching customers talk to each other. Someone says, man, this part of the game is broken, and someone else replies, no, it's not, and here's why. And that discussion the two of them can have is useful for us because it helps us see how our customers see the product. So, yeah, both those forums get read by us, so they've both influenced the product. They both have their own, their own framework, right? I mean,
their own views,
exactly. You need to think about that. Like, statistically, we know, for example, that the Steam, our own forums constitute about 3% of our total audience in TF. So we have to be careful about how much we're going to, pay attention to them, right? Now, obviously, but it's not like everyone who's not posting on that forum disagrees with them either, right? I mean, they're all respective, there'll be many people who don't post on those forums who share their opinions, and so it's our job to try and find.
Right. It's the whole silent majority, I mean, versus the vocal minority thing.
Yeah, I mean...
Some of that?
I think some of that. I mean, I think that's perhaps too simple. I think it's a lot messier than that. Mm. I don't think...
Yeah.
I'm not saying we have all the answers either. I think as a general rule, we try to spot threads and we try to focus on problems and not solutions. So, if you're someone who's thinking about what is Valve thinking about when they read this forum, what we're looking for mostly is problems in the product that people perceive that are shared by other people. So, people who post solutions, like, I think the game they should add this or change this. That's just less useful to us because we want to know why. Like, what is it that's causing you to say that? Because it may be that two different people posting two different threads, both wanting an addition to the game, are actually both trying to solve the same problem. And it may be that if we know what problem they're both trying to solve through their feature addition or their change they're proposing or whatever, then there may be an elegant solution that solves the problem in a way they're both happy with. But if they're both just talking about solutions, they may not even realize themselves that they're both trying to solve the same problem. So as a general rule, we're looking, as we read all the various forums and read the emails we get and so on, what we're looking for is to try and find common threads of problems in the product. And then once we've identified problems we want to fix, that's places where we look for solutions, right? I mean, sometimes the community solutions are better than the ones we come up with, but if we don't know the problems we're trying to fix first, it's hard for us to evaluate solutions.
Right. Are you learning as much as you hope from the beta? Because I know that the original beta, where it was invite-only, it apparently had some problems getting off the ground.
It was just... Not at all, actually. The original beta was just solving a different problem. The original beta was focused on getting us feedback from a group of players that we were just having trouble getting feedback from, which was the hardcore competitive community. and at the time, there was some technology constraints that made it a lot easier for us to run a smaller scoped beta. And just over the years, both those problems have become less. Like, we are now able, you know, we got to the point where it was fine to run a full-scale beta. And we also have better, you know, we have consistent, regular communication with the hardcore community now, so that makes that easier. And then we had some newer problems, right? We knew we had this replay thing that we'd been working on for a year that we needed to test. And we were just, it was just so, there was so much... There's just a lot of code change for that, right? In our engine and a bunch of other places. And we didn't want to ship that on, if you remember when the first day we shipped it to beta, there were some problems there that we got fixed up in the next couple of days. But we didn't want to make TF, there was a lot of risk there. We didn't want to say, hey, you know, TF may become unplayable for the next couple of days, sorry. So, you know, there were other goals we had, like testing large amounts of code that had all culminated in this idea of, it'd be really useful to be able to have a beta type thing. So, yeah.
How do you feel about the current, I guess, economy when it comes to trading? I mean, people have been selling unusual hats for several thousand dollars. I mean, do you see that as a problem, or is that something that's perfectly fine?
I guess we always knew it was going to happen. We didn't know how much people would sell stuff for, but we knew it was going to happen. The day we introduced trading, we knew that was going to happen. And that was one of the reasons why we sort of dragged our feet on the trading, because we were worried about support to some extent being ready for those kinds of issues and having all the back end ready to be able to deal with it and stuff like that. So that stuff is just inevitable. As a game developer, I can talk about whether I would like it or not, but it's sort of irrelevant, actually. It's just going to happen. The community will make it happen, whether you like it or not. Once people can exchange things that they value, then that's going to happen. Our goal, I guess, would be to try and build systems where, hopefully, over time, there's not too much risk involved in that. Because right now, I think anyone doing that kind of stuff is engaging in a whole bunch of risk. I mean, we can't protect you. There's nothing we can do if you get scammed doing that kind of stuff.
Right. And kind of talking about that, currently the only way to open a crate or use a crate is with a key that you need to buy from the store. And a lot of people have been kind of saying, and I know this goes back to the whole thing, we want problems, not solutions, but they've made suggestions like, oh, why don't you make them craftable? Because there are people that literally have pages and pages of just nothing but crates. Right. They've just been stockpiling.
Yeah, providing people with something to do with crates if they don't want to open them is something we are working on. It probably won't be anything to do with keys, but it'll be something to do with crates if you're not interested in opening. I mean, there are plenty of features in the game and plenty of them in the Manco store. The Manco stores itself is one of them. That we fundamentally, our expectation is not that every customer is interested in them. You know, the different customers are interested in different things. I mean, you see that by the example you gave of how, you know, for some people, the thing they want to buy in the Manco store is the most expensive item. For some people, the thing they want to buy is the cheapest item. And for some people, they don't want to buy anything in the Manco store, and that's totally fine. So, you know, the keys are interesting to some people, and now it's not our goal to try and make sure that everyone has to use them. We set crate drops. We did our initial crate dropping set, and the way we sort of tuned them has been to try and find a balance by where we felt like if you weren't someone who was ever going to own, you know, you're never going to open crates, for example, we felt our hope was that you would still be able to get value for them, right, and that you could trade them off. And there's a bunch of sort of data analysis we're doing about what, you know, the right amount to tune that and so on.
Right. I've noticed that's kind of influenced some of the newer crates, because some of the newer ones, like the current series, 10 through 12, is it? They have the Australian Christmas stuff built into them.
Yeah, so just, we're just sort of exploring there, I guess, to find out, you know, our data shows us there are different customers interested in different things, and we're just trying to provide them all with... you know, something they're interested in, I guess.
Right. All right, so that's part one. And then, so starting off with part two, do you think hats / new items have a major influence over the previously established art style?
I think the right way to think about this is the thing I said right back at the start, which is that, you know, design is a thing about, you know, design is about finding you know, the right thing to do amidst a set of goals and constraints. And so the goals we had for our art direction when we shipped didn't include anything involving character customization at all. And so, you know, just adding that feature alone meant that our design should change, our art direction should change. And so it has. You know, I think today our art direction is different because it's trying to do a set of different things that were never thought about when we did the initial art direction. It would have been nice to have known at that time when we designed that stuff that that we would do this later and have that, you know, perhaps more holistically involved. But yeah, it's nice to have hindsight,
right?
And we don't have that luxury. So yeah, I mean, our art direction has changed absolutely, and it should have.
And approximately how many community submissions have you received? Not so much avatars, but more weapons, hats, etc.
Thousands.
And so what criteria do you use to narrow those thousands down to the three that get in for that one class?
I mean, right now the primary criteria is what can we actually get done. I mean, the problem is once you go through those, there are, if you say we'll establish a quality bar, like, you know, which we've done, obviously, of, you know, we're only going to use things that are above a certain quality. The problem is there's still way more, you know, you're still in the hundreds of items. So our primary constraint right now is just the amount of time we have and the stuff that, you know, and so we have a set of things that we're thinking about, like design additions, classes that need attention and stuff like that, problems that need addressing design-wise, and so we'll go and find items that solve some of those problems for us. Sometimes items come in that we see that we're just really excited about. You look at it and you're like, wow, that's just really, really cool. I really like that. I want to ship it. You know, what do we have that we could associate with that? I think as a general rule across the board, though, we're pretty bad at this part. I think the thing where worst at here is providing good feedback to the contributors themselves about why some items are selected and why their items aren't selected. And the primary problem right now is just one of volume. Like, we can't even provide them all with feedback. So we have some, we're working on some stuff that'll get the community more involved in that and get feedback to the creators sooner and hopefully make that whole thing a lot more transparent.
Okay. What is your current stance on the amount of promotional items and how they work with TF2 style?
So, I mean, there are a few different pieces to this. I may as well take this opportunity to answer Because I see a bunch of angst around these things. And, so one is the amount of promotional stuff we do. It's important to realize that promotional stuff in general is an incredibly small amount of work for us. Like, to do an item, like, you know, a single promotional item or a couple of items usually takes us a couple of days. Because if it's an item that has no stats, it's just an asset to build, and that's really cheap. And in a lot of cases, we can work with the game we're collaborating with to have them send us raw source files or something like that that we then stylize. So that stuff's really cheap. You know, all the promotional stuff we've done has been done while we've been doing all the other updates along the way. I think to us, when we look around at like what we've done there and which ones are we most excited by, I think the ones that we would all point to would be the Shogun stuff. We're really happy with those items. We think that they visually fit TF style really nicely. They were made by Rob Laro, who did the Soldiers public count pack with the black box and the we love Rob's work. We think he understands TF style really well, and we spent probably as much time, if not more time, on the gameplay of those weapons and testing them as we did on any of the other updates, class updates we've done over the years. So, and the way that they're in the drop system, they're craftable, they're in the store, they're just like, you know, if you weren't aware there was this product called Shogun, it'd look just like any other TF update, I think. And going forward, I think that's the sort of stuff we want. We want things that look a lot more like true collaborations between us, the other product we're working with, and the community itself. I think it's awesome to have community members creating these assets. I guess that's the sort of stuff we'd like to do more. They take more work though, because they're, you know, to us they are just like another update. We're going to do the design and implementation and playtesting on those items just like we would if they were an update, any other update. So probably be fewer of them, but they'll probably hopefully be higher quality, I think. I guess there's one other thing I should point out. And early on, I think one of the things we were testing when we did promotional stuff was how far outside the TF2R direction can we get before it starts to really look bad. I think we hit that point, and we're not going to go there again. I think the items, a couple of the items we've shipped in the past have been as far away from the TF's art style as we want to go.
And those items would be, I'm just curious.
I think the dangerous glasses would probably be out there. I think those don't probably one of the most egregious things to pick one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tricky, right? The reality is, like, right now, after I've said that, there's a bunch of TF players who are all really unhappy at me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, God.
I need to take this. Give me a sec.
All right.
Yeah. So, now I'm going to pause this, and when Robin comes back, I will resume. Sorry about that, folks. And if you heard, that was the Tom Bowie song.
So, on the subject of the promo items, will there ever be, say, a Portal 2 one? Because I know we have the pin already that in the game. Is that going to be the promo item? I haven't seen anything about it announced officially.
We're not ready to talk about the Portal 2 stuff yet.
Okay. Even though it's releasing in less than a month, so...
Oh, there's plenty of time to do stuff.
Yeah. Okay. What was the idea behind paints like lime green, hot pink, or hats like Dr. Dapper's Topper, or, say, the Brain Slug? I mean, the people, of course, who have been saying, oh, they don't fit the art style, they don't... Because I know on the Contribute site you have that little swatch, and...
Yeah.
People don't think that, say, pink or green fit there.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I've sort of already covered this, I guess, or a bunch of what I've said could be applied to this. Some of this is about us testing our edges. Some of it is the challenge of, you know, as I said about the color swatch is an interesting thing. The color swatch and that stuff there is fundamentally what we designed the original TF2 art direction with. and it didn't contain anything that would remotely allow for customization, and so we needed to expand beyond that. Customization is a tricky thing. Fundamentally, people care about stuff that allows them to look different to other people, and so if you lock it down too much, no one cares about any of it. If all the paints were, had very little variance between them, no one would want to use them. So it's a challenge.
Right. And would you be willing to say, add something to me? And this is something, again, another solution to a problem, but the community asked me to ask this. Would you be willing to add something that, say, disables hats or paint client side? Like, everybody else can see the hats, but the person who disabled the hats and paint can't see it. Would that be something?
We've talked about it, but haven't come to any decision yet.
Okay. I think you've already addressed this question, which is, do you feel the class are still distinguished enough with the new weapons, hats, and paint? Like, because the soldier can heal himself, so he didn't need a medic or something like that. I mean, people.
I think our class roles are still distinct enough. There are other ways that people can heal themselves, for example, but no one's going to argue that they'll outdo a medic at this point. All right, the medic still has inherent advantages, apart from the fact he heals much more than anyone else, and he has Uber and all this other stuff. I think that similarly, it's not like there's a version of the soldier or something that'll be better than a scout is at what the scout does, for example. So, that's definitely something we worry about and something we pay attention to. But I think any of the issues we have there today, to be honest, are probably ones we had when we shipped. The risk, the trickiness around cost balancing in class games is much more around generalists. Like the challenge you have is finding the right balance between general applicability and specialist. So like the soldier and the demo are just very generally applicable classes, and so they're a pain to balance relative to the specialist classes.
They also share weapons too, which can affect stuff.
Yeah, it hasn't really made it any harder, like that, or made it any worse than the balance between those classes and the specialists when we shipped.
All right, so that's end of part two. So now part three is, of course, what do you see for the future as TF2? And I understand this is going to be full of, oh, we can't discuss this, but...
No, it wouldn't be that.
But it's full of,
I don't know. I mean, I didn't think we... As a general, we try not to plan too far ahead because our goal is to react to customers. We build things like replay. It's like, ask me, what do you think replay will be in 6 months? And it's like, I don't really know. I mean, we have ideas for what we could, as we work on it, we come up with ideas for other ways we could improve it. But those are just ideas, right? The customers are going to come up with their ideas as they play with it, and they're going to run into problems with it, and they're going to use it in some way. Sorry.
Yep.
Okay, sorry about that. Yet another Tom Bowie phone call.
Okay. So how frequent will, say, large updates with multiple weapons, maps, game modes, optimization, achievements, etc., will be put into TF2 in next coming months? And will they be mostly community-supplied, or will Valve be supplying the majority of the content? Or is that kind of too hard to say?
The way we tend to work is we try and just build stuff over time. Like we just, every day people are working on stuff. And then as it collects into something which makes, sort of starts looking like a big enough piece to release, then we start talking about, what's a package for this that could go out. So, we can do bigger updates. You just get them slightly slower. That's really the only trade. It's just a pure time to size ratio. The community can help us with that, I think. If we use community-built assets, I think there's an inherent advantage to that over and above us building things because, the community gets to be involved and we reward community creators. I think that's really cool. So, there'll be pieces of that we'll build, and there'll be pieces of that the community will build. I think that's absolutely certain. There are exact ratios of that. I guess we don't really sweat a lot. It's not something we think is super important. In terms of the size, as I sort of said, you know, we'll wait and see. I think there are things we care about. I think we've been talking recently about starting a second round of class updates, so maybe we'll start doing that. And then there are other, we've got a large amount of stuff over there in beta right now that's not in the main branch, and obviously that should move over there sometime soon. So, there's lots of stuff to do, and there's always lots of ideas, and the community's constantly hitting us with lots more suggestions. So, how it shakes out, I'm not super sure, but we'll keep working on it.
So there's a possibility of ever seeing a medic update too?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of interesting. I think the community thinks about that in a way that we don't, and that's perhaps a bit of a problem. Like, we think of when we go back and look at what we released in the medic pack, it's actually sort of feels less than any of the classless update type things we've done since then, because we've got much more efficient at producing things like items and so on. But it seems that the community's perception seems to be that if we do an item pack that happens to contain three or four items for the medic, that's still less valuable than if we did a medic pack along with achievements and all that sort of stuff. So we need to think about that. We need to think about, how we sort of approach that kind of thing, I guess. So
yeah. Will there ever be more kind of story-based updates, such as engineer update?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, our writers have all been really busy for the last, year or so on Portal 2, and that's been one of the reasons why it was hard for us to get time. I suspect that probably the majority of times that the community often fears that we've changed our philosophies, that the evidence they're pointing to is actually much more a function of just resource allocation within the company around, like, who's busy with what right now type stuff than it has to do ever with the changes in our opinions, our beliefs about what we should do. Like going from three level designers to one as two of them jump on to help Portal 2 out, for example, has a much bigger impact on the next updates we did, the updates that followed, than any opinion about what should be in those updates.
Right. And will there ever be kind of like a final update? I mean, say Team Fortress, like, 10 years old, and you finally say, all right, this is the final update.
I have no idea what we'll be doing in 6 years from now.
So just kind of final update that's off the table, pretty much, right?
I wouldn't say anything's ever off the table. I just don't know, right? I mean, I don't know what we'll be doing a year from now. I certainly didn't think we would be working on TF2 today at the point where we shipped TF, right? So it's the work we do and the response from our customers that really defines, or is the thing which will make our decisions for us going forward. We'll just see what happens.
Has there ever been thoughts of, say, expanding TF2 media, maybe graphic novel, explain like the class histories, maybe more shorts after Meet the Team is done?
We've talked about all of the above, absolutely. Oh. I mean, who knows what'll happen?
What about an art book, kind of like Half-Life 2, Raising the Bar, along those lines?
I'd love for us to do that, but the answer to sort of every question you're asking is essentially resources.
Yeah.
The art book is actually just a whole chunk of work to gather all that stuff and organize it and lay it out. It's just a bunch of work.
Right. It's nine years. Yeah.
The desire is absolutely there.
Right.
All of us. But it's just a matter of, I think one of the things people, it's important to understand about our company is that we're not like most companies. There isn't someone who decides what everyone is going to do. Gabe doesn't tell anyone what to do, and I don't tell anyone on the TF team what to do. Instead, you can view people as resources, and they go wherever they think is a place where they can add some value to customers, and that's interesting to them personally. And so, as a result, there's been a bunch of people who have said, I would love for us to make an art book, but none of them have got to the point where they said, now I'm going to be the one who goes off and does it. And until someone does that, it's not going to happen. And that's sort of perhaps the short answer to all of your questions about, what are we going to do next? It's like, well, it depends on what people want to do next.
Right. Now, if you notice, I, of course, have the Xbox version of the Orange Box, which hasn't gotten an update in quite some time. I mean, will we ever see an update for the Xbox 360 version or the PS3 version?
I mean, we'd love to update them, but I don't think it's something we would even know how to do right now.
Well,
I think as we were talking earlier, like the current version of TF is something, like, you know, was it like 6-something gig now?
I don't even know how we'd
pull that off. I mean, there's just a huge amount of work there. And until, you know, you sort of look back at my previous answer, until someone says, you know, that's the thing I want to go and work on.
And optimization, too, I mean, because the Xbox isn't a PC, I mean, it's...
Yeah, that's, when I say work, that's sort of what I mean.
Right.
There's just a lot, you know, you've got 3 years worth of additions that weren't constrained by a set of, you know, technological constraints that the Xbox has.
Right.
And so they would have to all be, you know, those are problems that would have to be worked through. None of it's impossible, it's just work.
Right.
And so someone has to decide, it's more valuable for me to go and do that work than to work on anything else I could do. And for the last, you know, 3 years or so, that's, at least the last couple of years, that's part of the problem, is that it's always been more valuable for us to work on the PC version.
Right. And of course, and that's with the Xbox version. Is the PlayStation 3 version kind of the same? Because I know we have Steamworks coming on Portal. Would there be a way to, say, add Steamworks, retrofit it to the PS3 version?
Steamworks helps. Steamworks solves some of the problems for us that are tricky on the Xbox around updating. But at the end of the day, you still need to go do all that work to make all the extra stuff we've done actually work on the PS3.
So we need further optimization.
I think optimization's a part of it, but there's lots of other work there, right? It's just, you know, what about any interface we've added? You know, the loadout screens don't work with the controller.
Right.
The problem is much more around, you've got, you know, 2 years or so of work, right, or maybe 3 years, I can't remember the exact numbers, of work that has been done without that in mind. And so someone needs to go back and look at all that work
right. And
make sure that it's correct.
Now, say you guys do decide to do, say, just the PS3 and do put Steamworks on, I'm just completely hypothetical, would that include cross-platform?
I have no idea.
Okay.
And at the point where, because that's just another set of work to
right.
do, right? You can do cross-platform. It's, everything is just work.
Right. Well, like Portal 2 is cross-platform with PS3, PC.
But that, they, you know, they designed it from that, right? They built for that.
Right. And then, now, I know, like, say, instead of updating the Orange Box version, what if you were to re-release TF2 on the consoles as kind of, like, updated to, say, the 2011 version?
It doesn't solve the problem, right?
It still doesn't.
The problem I'm describing is not one of the updates. I mean, there are problems specific to the Xbox around updates that aren't super interesting to go into. The point is that's not the bulk of the work. The bulk of the work is you need to take 2 or more years of content and make it work on a product for which it was never designed to work on, right? And it shares a common base that did work on that product that makes your problem somewhat easier, but at the end of the day, you've still got to do a bunch of work there. And so you have to decide, you know, so for example, like with the crossplay feature, for the Portal 2 team could decide for a product that they were working on and hadn't shipped yet, that was a feature that was worth the time it would take to implement, too.
Right.
And when I say worth, I mean there are enough customers who are interested in it and the value it would add to them was greater than the value they could generate doing other work. And think of it this way. You come into work on, you know, any given day and you have 8 hours or so of work you can do, and you have to decide what's the right 8 hours of work for you to do, right? You can do anything. Like, the reality is you've got code, you've got programmers, and you've got a bunch of resources. You can work on anything. So the hard part is figuring out, is not doing the work necessarily, it's figuring out what's the right work to do. And you have to have some kind of framework, whether it's you think about how many customers will get that feature, or of the customers will get it, how valuable it is. And you need to be able to find a feature that makes the most sense to you to work on. And that, when I say find a feature, it might be fixing bugs, it might be improving performance, it might be adding a new item or a weapon or a map or whatever. You've got to make all those. So at the end of the day, people have to make that decision all the time. And so at some point, Portal 2 team decided crossplay made more sense, it would generate more value than something else they did. TF team or people on the TF team have to think about that. And so, you know, when they look at consoles or anything else, right, there's no difference to us. There's no inherent difference really between the consoles or Mac or any other platform or Linux or whatever.
Right.
Right? You still need to think about, is this more valuable than any other work I could do of equivalent, you know, of equivalent cost, I guess? Or
exactly. So it, so if anything, it's, say if TF still continues to grow and gets to the point where finally someone on the TF team says, okay, let's go back to the Xbox or let's go back to the PlayStation, when someone actually sits down, says that, said, all right, I'm going to go work on it now, and they just go and work on it and actually it gains some steam, right, that's the day. So it's yeah, completely dependent on the employees. Then.
Yes. I mean, dependent on the employees and the sort of, you know, what's going on out there, I guess, like the community and the state of the world.
Right. There are, I guess,
there are many factors.
Yeah, I guess now it's kind of like the consoles are, it's a nice thing to have, but is it completely necessary? Maybe not. Right?
Mm, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty much it, unless you have some closing comments or something to add, something you'd like to say to the community, something you'd like, you've been wanting to address.
I think I inserted them as we hit them.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for this interview. I certainly feel quite a few people will enjoy it, and I certainly feel it'll spark just as much debate as it just quirled. So
it always does.
Yeah. So this. So I suspect you'll be reading the threads of the.
Oh, we read them all.
Yeah.
It'd be very boring. It'd be a boring interview if it didn't. If it didn't generate some discussion.
Yeah. I predict the threads growing to very large numbers. All right. Well, thank you again, and that is it.